It's Terry from No Crumbs Left, and I'm sitting across from neighbor Tia Gaddis. Welcome.
Thank you.
This is so fun to have you here.
I'm excited.
We're working our way down the block. We're just like, you know, we're getting everybody. So, I mean, community. I mean, first of all, you're an amazing member of the community, and everybody loves you. But of course, what comes to mind is, and let's just break into it with the story of how you supported our community.
Okay. The stroller story?
The stroller story.
The infamous stroller story, yes. So that was back in 2012. There were a lot of packages and garages being broken into, packages being stolen off the front porches in our neighborhood. And one night I left my stroller on our front porch, and it was missing the next day. And I was mad because I had four kids, and this was the single stroller that I could actually go out running with my oldest daughter. And I knew we wouldn't replace it. And I went on to Craigslist. I found it. And I set up a sting operation with my best friend, who I refer to as, like, we're like the Laverne and Shirley.
I love it.
Or Cagney and Lacey in this instance. And I notified the police, let them know what I was going to do. They said, you know, If this is the person, it is your stroller, call us. And 2 days later, right before the sting went down, I told my husband, and he was like, "Where are we going?" I'm like, we're just going to go buy our stroller back. And showed up, and the guy showed up with the stroller, and it had our palms from Palm Sunday in it, had my children's artwork in it. I knew it was mine, and I really knew I had two options. Either I could, like, walk away with the stroller thinking to myself, I could roll this guy if I had to, or I was going to call the police. And fortunately, I called the police.
So what happened next?
Oh, so about 6 months of stalking. So I went to court. They prosecuted him. The judge at the time was very critical that this was being prosecuted because, you know, and I felt like I'm a lawyer and I'm here in court. I know how to do this. And this individual would show up, and I felt like thinking to myself, you know, people who don't know this system, I know this system. And I felt like I was being shamed because I left my stroller on the porch, and it was stolen, and I was wasting the court's time with just a stroller. But I knew the neighborhood was being, you know, was being a victim of a lot of thefts. So I went to my neighbor who's mom's condo building had been broken into. I got her security camera footage from the building manager, watched it. I saw that it was the same guy, took that back into the police department and said, this is a problem and this needs to be addressed. So fast forward, this individual started stalking a lot of people. I didn't know at the time, but there were 13 other victims that he was stalking. One of them was us, but he did, I say stalking, which sounds, and it was serious at the time because he would come to our house at all hours of the night, but.
And he would ring the doorbell. What would he do?
He would show up. Basically what he would do is, I believe he was parked in a car watching this happen, but he would post on Craigslist that I was house sitting and that I was a flight attendant and that I was interested in meeting men in the middle of the night.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I had four young children at home. And so I would go down the stairs, open up the window and say, "You're a victim of a crime," and then call the police. The police would come over. They would leave. Next person would come up. But he would do things.
That
you know,
is so awful.
Oh, it was terrible.
I didn't know that. I just knew you led the charge and you got the strollers back.
Right. So I started doing kind of my own investigation into it. And found 12 other victims, found some other victims that we kind of worked together. We found out where he lived. We had a lot of information about him. And it's just hard to get, in a big city, it's hard to get attention such as package thefts from the police. And as it turns out, when the bust went down 6 months later, a court ordered that the police could enter into his home. It turns out he was the most prolific serial burglar in the history of Chicago.
Wow.
And so I got a call from the state's attorney at the time who said, "Once you know where he lives, why don't you come and see this?" And I showed up and I was astounded at, at how many people. And, you know, he took our stroller, but he took, like, packages from people waiting for, like, IVF medication. There was a lot of pharmaceutical medication. And that really affected people.
Yeah.
But then the best part of the story, Terry, is that afterwards the police basically opened up the precinct, the local precinct, and they put all the stolen items that people could go in and recover. And so that was great to have that happen.
You are amazing. So tell me, what is your concept of community?
My concept of community is really our community. I consider it to be my urban family. I've lived in the community since 2000. And I'm not from Chicago. I'm originally from Indiana. My husband is from Michigan. But we've developed an urban family and sister wives and a lot of wonderful people, including our neighbors, including our school community, that we just spend a lot of time with.
And when you say sister wives, what does that mean?
So sister wives is a concept where everybody has a great role. Mm-hmm. And the women on our block, as you know, and you've interviewed some of them here on the podcast, are really fantastic, inspiring women. And so there are times, you know, there are certain friends that I can lean on when I need something. Say, for example, I'm running late because I'm working late, or my husband can't get to the kids to pick them up from school. I know who to call. I know when I was pregnant with the twins that my neighbors right next to us, whom you also know, would deliver a salad to me every single night, and it was their leftover salad. We have like potluck dinners on Sunday nights where we just kind of clean out our refrigerators and make some fantastic dish to share and catch up on each other and our kids and our lives and our family and our jobs. So that's the concept of sister wives.
I love that. I mean, we're talking about right now this idea of superpowers, and we're working on an issue of Friday Favorites, and that's one of the things we're going to do is what is your superpower, which I love, you know, is a concept that someone introduced to me. So what do you think your superpower is?
Probably unsolicited advice.
Right. Okay. I love that. I love that. That's another podcast, but I love it. So do you just, and Lori and I are like really wanting to do a podcast like this. So do you just often, you're giving people, you know, advice?
Yeah. You know, I'm just that person that, I'll tell you if there's broccoli in your teeth. We may have just met, or I may have seen you across the room. I'm going to tell you you had broccoli in your teeth. But I think the unsolicited advice stuff is my superpower.
And do you think it comes from, like, you know, it's like loving your neighbors and loving community and, yeah.
Yeah, I kind of, it's the concept of I know what I would want to hear from somebody and I want the truth.
Right.
And so, you know, I want to share that truth.
What's your astrological sign?
Gemini.
You're a Gemini. Do you know anything else about your chart?
No, but I do have this birthday book, mm-hmm. and on my that day describes me to a T.
I love that. So I know one of your superpowers, or I've heard from neighbors, is like you are such an advocate for the school, and just tell me a little bit about your involvement there and places it's taken you.
So my kids are in the Chicago Public Schools, and our local school is really close to our house. And I have found a lot of, you know, it's like rainbows and unicorns, that place where I just feel so at home. And I really like the people who I've gotten to know. One of the things that I've recently done, for example, is, and I know you're big in this too, where you shop locally. I also remind people to think locally. Think about your neighbors. Think about people in business or networking that maybe you're not going to give them a job, but you're going to give them a contact or a shoe in the door. And so, for example, a lot of the school events were focused on fundraising because of what Chicago Public Schools, obviously we have a money crisis. So some of the schools do additional fundraising to help subsidize additional teachers, additional classroom work, additional help for kids who need it. And people were really proactive, and it was amazing how much money they could raise. So I thought a lot about, you know, all these working individuals that are working towards a common goal. What about getting a benefit for them in the networking and pulling in your business side? So maybe we could get some corporate sponsorships if individuals in our neighborhood were able to give a business justification for helping out a fellow parent to send them business. Then the corporations maybe could donate money to this, the school. And so we came up with this concept of think first, think locally first. And it you know, if I'm going to redo my office and I know the guy who provides office furniture, I'm going to make an introduction to him. And that was kind of a good community concept.
I love that. I mean, I like this idea of small and local. And, you know, here's what I feel like. If we get everything at these, you know, huge online places,
yeah,
there aren't going to be any middle-class jobs left. And
right.
So when I'm purchasing, you know, the truth is I go down the street to the local bookstore, not because it's less, but because this is in my community and I care about my community. You know,
yeah.
I was saying the other day, I bought a vacuum. I know I could go online and bought it, but I went and I spoke to my local vacuum guy and said, I'd like to get a vacuum from you and not even check online what's the best price, but can you give me, you know, a fair price? And I don't want to take advantage of him or her, but, you know, we went out and got a vacuum.
Yeah.
You know, because in every situation, if we can buy local, whether it's our farmer, whether it's our retailer, our bookstore, whenever we can, you know, it makes a difference in our world, makes the community be a better place for sure.
I 100% agree. And plus, you've got a place to go back to. If you have an issue, you can take the vacuum back. You can ask questions or problem solve, and you've got somebody to talk to. I'm a big proponent as well, even for like birthday presents, for gifts. I try to buy a gift certificate at the local bookstore that you and I love, earrings from the local shop. There are just a lot of ways to contribute in a way, because it's not only servicing the community, but also employing our neighbors.
Yes, it's really important. Now, let's just talk about your past. I mean, you're a lawyer, and how did you come to be that?
That's a great question that I think about it. When I was very, very young, one of my first memories as a child was, I remember my parents would say, Tia, why don't you tell everyone what you want to be? And I used to say, I want to be the first female president of the United States. And I don't even know where that came from, because that was in the early 70s. But I I just really loved law and the power of the law and the effect it had on people and the ability to make changes, positive changes, in a way that you can help people resolve sometimes the worst chapter of their life. Because I'm in litigation, so I'm in the courtroom a lot, my job is to shepherd somebody through a really dark time in their life, that either in their business or personally, to close the chapter and come to a resolution. So that was my motivation. It was either that, or I was also very interested in becoming a geneticist. And I'm not kidding when I tell you that when somebody told me that I would wear a lab coat all the time as a geneticist, it wasn't as appealing to me as being able to dress up and wear fun suits.
Well, what was your model for that? I mean, was your dad a lawyer, or how did you, you know, dream that for yourself?
You know, I didn't have any lawyers in my family. I am first generation I'm the first one in my family to get a bachelor's degree, first one in my family to get a law degree. Everyone around me worked, and that's just what I wanted to do. There was one friend I had, her dad was a lawyer, and they lived in the fancy subdivision in my neighborhood that I always joked with my family. I was like, that's where my real family lives, but I'm stuck with you guys. And I remember him talking about stories, and he was a criminal lawyer, and these just really exciting, fun stories. And litigators tend to be great storytellers, and he was a great storyteller. And I was mesmerized with the stories he would tell.
And what about your mom?
My mom, I was raised by a single mom. So
we're allowed to tear up. We're if we don't tear up at least once, we don't feel that good about it. So
I was raised by a single mom, and I get choked up just because it's a soft spot for me. Because, you know, I'm married. I have a husband who's very supportive. And wow, I got to get a hold of myself here. Pull myself together. Here we go. All right. So my mom was single in the 80s, and it was tough. It was tough for her. And I'm very fortunate because, you know, we didn't have money. But I had all the love in the world. And I give her so much credit and praise, because how difficult it must have been for her.
Yeah.
So she, you know, and we had great times. It was just her and I. We felt very much like a team. I do have two brothers, but, you know, with divorces, kids can go back and forth. And my older brother tended to do that. So we were really, truly a team. And so there were times we didn't have heat in the house, or she would come home and the heat was turned off because the bills weren't paid. And she just always had a way of figuring things out. And I never had to worry. And looking back, you kind of, you know, we all probably do that in our lives where you kind of look back and you're like, wow, you know, kudos to you. High five. And it reminds me when I was like in middle school and I was always mortified. So my parents get divorced. She's a stay-at-home mom. She had me when she was 21. My grandmother had her when she was 20. My great-grandmother had her when she was 20. So she's a single mom. She's divorced. My dad isn't excellent at making support payments. So we moved back home to Indiana. And we had her brothers and sisters and my grandparents that supported us. But we lived with my grandparents for a while until she could get back on her feet. And then she was depressed, obviously. Anybody would be. Her brother ends up dying. My grandfather has a heart attack. And there was a lot of chaos at the time. And she didn't have a job, and she knew she needed a job. So I'll never forget, she interviewed for, I don't know if you remember Legs Pantyhose.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll never forget this, because I think I was in the fifth grade, and we were living with my grandparents, and she didn't have a suit to wear to an interview. She didn't have shoes to wear. So she kind of pieced things together, but her feet are big, as are my daughter's. And so she had to wear my grandmother's heels into the interview. And so she goes to the interview, and I'll never forget this. She, at the end of the interview, they say, is there anything else you want to say? And she said, I'm a single mom. I need this job.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And I remember her coming home, and we were so happy because this meant freedom and independence and a house. And I remember she was wearing shoes that were too small. So,
well, what a role model. What an inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, that lays you out for life in terms of it sets you up for life.
Yeah.
You know, to really to have someone to aspire to be.
Right.
Somebody who makes it through, who makes it happen, mm-hmm. and go out there and, you know, to go out there and say, I really want this job.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, not for her, but for her kids.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, I get really choked up because it's a vulnerable spot and sharing that with so many people. But I'm really proud of her because that could not have been easy. And she got the job that day.
I love it.
Yeah.
And so did you drive around in one of those legs vans?
So the best part of her job was she also had a box truck on the side of it. So I want to remind you, I have a single mother. And she's driving around in a Legs pantyhose truck that says, nothing beats a great pair of legs. And I'm in middle school. And guess what vehicle she has to use to come pick me up? Because we didn't have another car at the time. So,
did it embarrass you?
Mortified. I was mortified about it. And I remember her saying, you know what, Tia? You don't need to worry about it. No one else is. That truck is paying our bills. Nobody else judging you is paying those bills.
Right.
And so my friends actually really liked it. I didn't get made fun of about it, but you know, when you're in middle school, everything is such a big deal. I mean, my daughter now, if I wear a suit that I wear to court and go to school and pick her up, she's like, Mom, do you have to wear that outfit?
Right. It's such a different day.
Yeah.
So I know you have the super loving family and that you are a heart in the neighborhood. So what does family mean to you, and what is chosen family?
So obviously my family, my mom's family, I'm very close with. And my family, my husband, who's wonderful, you know him, and my kids are my heart and soul. My in-laws are wonderful. I'm very close with them as well. They have great tidbits of advice. My mother-in-law's advice always rings through in my head on a daily basis. Funny things, profound things. You know, my father-in-law always tells me, if I say, oh, I just, you know, I'm frustrated with work and I can't wait till I retire. And he reminds me, he's like, don't wish your life away. And so, so my family is wonderful. My chosen family. So I happen to have a best friend who is my teammate in college.
Was she Cagney and Lacey? Is this?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. She lives two blocks from me, and we've either lived with each other or two blocks from each other since we were 18 years old. So she's my chosen sister, and we're very lucky to have each other. And I'm amazed that I'm, you know, you and Lori are, have been friends for as long as you have. She's kind of that to me. Mm-hmm. My chosen family is obviously my neighbors and my community and the people around me who, when, you know, I need something, they're there. And when they need something, I'm there.
Yeah. I mean, this idea of, you know, building each other up, supporting each other, you know, being a community, whether it's being a part of a food train, you know, or yeah. knowing your neighbor's pregnant and, you know, need something.
Yeah. Yeah. And the concept of teams and being a teammate, because my mom was, you know, my parents were going through a divorce in middle school, and we lived in a very rural area. Like, my closest neighbors were Amish people and cows that lived on a farm. So there wasn't a lot to do. Sports was an outlet for me. And the ability, and I remember that being very, that affected me a great deal when I started playing sports. And that was my first sense of community with my peers, that fortunately translated throughout my high school and college.
And you, I mean, I know you have some real talent. I know you're an athlete, your husband, but I know you played semi-pro. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I played basketball. I still do. And when I, you know, back to my mom's story, this is also a funny story. So sixth grade, try out for the basketball team. I get cut. Seventh grade, so that summer I go to camp, I try, I practice, I go down to this Mennonite church, which is the closest place to shoot hoops and practice. Seventh grade tryout, I get cut. Eighth grade, my mom shows up and watches my tryouts, and I made the team that year. I don't know why. I don't know if I will tell you that my eighth grade coach and my mom dated for some time when I was in high school, but I've not been able to confirm or deny any of these, right. these words.
But you know, it was kind of like a magic luck charm.
Yeah.
When, I mean, she showed up.
I got a break. So, then I played through high school. I got a full college scholarship, which is the only way I could have gone to college. And, so that was really my connection with sports. Afterwards, I played in a, Olympic national tournament. So at the time, between the years of the Olympics, they would have these Olympic national teams, and they would travel to locations and play against other national teams. Now, it wasn't the Olympic team. I wasn't that good, but it was kind of like having a scrub team play against the Olympic team of Mexico. And it was a lot of fun. It was a great experience. And this is before the WNBA. And so coming out of college, your option was to play what was called semi-pro. And what you did is you played on a travel team and played in against college teams in an exhibition level. And so before the season would start, I would plan a team and play Purdue with a group of other women. And we would get paid $75 to drive and play in these games. But that was the form of that was the life after college basketball. So then I took a year and a half off, and then I went to law school and I worked full time. And went to school at night, and did that for 4 years.
What does your mom think about where your life has taken you?
She's really proud, and just everything I've done, she's been with her seal of approval.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure she's just cheering you on.
Yeah.
How do you balance all of this? I mean, this is a lot. You have this amazing job. You're an advocate at school. You're setting up sting operations. You know, working full time, being a mom, how do you do all this?
That is probably the most common question I get asked when I'm working, and then people find out I have four kids, and I do it like anybody else does it. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing as work-life balance. It's something you have to intentionally incorporate in your life. And it's not easy. There are times that, you know, I might get up at 5 o'clock and not hit the bed until 11 o'clock and have sporadically pulled myself into different areas. But I really try to stay, when I'm in a moment, I try to be in that moment. So when I'm I'm at work, I'm at work. When I'm at home, I'm at home. And I try to just compartmentalize things and give 100% of what I'm doing at the time.
And in knowing like other successful women that you know or women that are able to do this, is there any quality or thread that you see?
You know, I always ask women, you know, and especially professional women who have run this race that I'm in now, you know, what did you do right and what do you wish you did more of? And the common theme I always hear them say is travel with your kids and vacation, because that's when you're all exposed to something together. You experience things together, and parents of adult children, and I'm sure you could, you know, yeah, you would agree with this, that it makes such an impact on them and you get to experience it together. The day-to-day life is like, it can get like Groundhog Day.
It really does.
Oh, yes. And, you know, it's like repeat every single day. But traveling breaks that up. And, you know, my mom, even though I would have Christmas and then we didn't spend money again until spring break. But we were going to drive that 1980 Camaro, pray that it got down to Florida across that line. And that was our spring break. And that was what we did. And we saved money for that. And, you know, we intentionally did that together. And those are some of my fondest memories.
Right. Is that your mother really created magic for you and it wasn't about having money.
Yeah.
But she figured out a way to really create unbelievable, you know, experiences for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I do think it's like, I feel like that make it happen. I mean, what about make it happen? I do feel like that is one of those threads for people that are getting stuff done that are successful. It's like, you know, people say, like, what do you do during these times? It's like, I just keep going.
Yeah.
You know, so you somehow make it happen.
Yeah. And, you know, you're a classic example, like with your pottery and making things happen. You know, when you just, I think there are times in my life and times in everyone's life where maybe you've folded and you've failed. And I always think to myself, I never want that to happen to me again. So sometimes just, you know, tucking your chin down and blasting through the uncomfortable moments, really there are great things on the other side. And I heard my son's coach say this, and it is so true, but sometimes you have to learn to be comfortable being uncomfortable.
Right. So much easier said than done.
Right, right.
It is so hard to sit in the discomfort. And, you know, something I tell myself when I'm having a really hard time and when I don't feel I'm okay is to say to myself, you're okay even if you don't feel you're okay.
Yeah.
And when I say it, I practically want to cry when I say it because it just is so comforting to me, you know, where it's like, is this going to matter in 10 years, you know, and you're okay even though, you know, you don't think you're okay.
Yeah. And, you know, there are always challenges. I mean, and recently, you know, I was going on this big pitch to a client and I'm walking down the hallway and one of the women in the office, she's like, are you wearing white underwear? And I'm in a pantsuit. And I'm like, why are you asking? And she's like, the back of your pants are split. And so it's like, I have to leave and I have to go to this pitch with ripped pants. And because I wasn't working out and I was chubby and I ripped my pants, and it's not the dry cleaner's fault and it's not the manufacturer of the pants' fault. It was my thing. And I had to go to the pitch. And sometimes you just have to.
Well, what did you do? Did you just kind of like back out the room?
Yeah. And I was so artful about how I walked, mm-hmm, and so conscious of everything I was doing that it turned out okay. And
did you get it?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Oh, good. Good. So I'm always thinking about this idea of, you know, failure and reinvention. I mean, just as a woman who's recreated myself more than once and,
yeah,
you know, created a career in my 50s and all of that. What do you think about the process of failure and reinvention?
It's a necessary process. And as much as you don't want to go through it, it happens. And figuring out on the other side where you're going to land is wonderful. I mean, the example I just gave with, you know, I've always been an athlete. I've done a lot of things athletically. I had kids and that took a lot of time and energy, and I stopped focusing on my health and I didn't have this connection between, like, I felt like an athlete, I didn't look like an athlete, you know? And so recently I was like, you know what, I'm going to start shaking it up. And I met this trainer who's a professional bodybuilder, and I've started bodybuilding.
Wow.
And just, you know, like doing things that I never thought I would do, but having fun doing it. And a lot of that came out of just I was tired of feeling like I didn't have this body-mind connection. Mm-hmm. And it's been a great experience. There are 7 other women. They're going to do bodybuilding competitions. I'm not. I'm just in it for heavy lifting and mm-hmm. changing my diet and how I'm eating. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been nice to be exposed to new groups of people and new thinking. And it just, it's that came out of like having the ripped pants. I mean, that happened more than once. I would go over to court and I'm like, oh, my skirt's really tight. And, you know, thinking it's the dry cleaners.
Right.
It's
right.
not. You're it's right. me.
when it's every piece of clothing.
Yeah.
It's like, no.
Yeah. But, you know, seeing my mom's challenges, too, certainly made an impact on me. And, you know, failure was never an option. It wasn't. So we call it failure. It's really not a failure. It's kind of the process of being reinvented.
And what do you think, how has this impacted your parenting?
A great deal. I wouldn't say I'm a hard mom, but, you know, there are difficult things and then there are things that you react when you're feeling sorry for yourself. And I don't really have much tolerance for that. And that's how I was raised as well. And I think it turned out okay for me. But I want my kids to be gritty. I don't want them to be so protected from mm-hmm. challenges that they don't know how to deal with them. I want them to be gritty kids.
I love that. I think you got a book in your future, Gritty Kids. I think it's a whole lot of us need to have our kids a lot more gritty. Well, thank you so much for coming here. What a pleasure, and how great to get to know you more and hear more of your story and all of that. If people want to find you, where do they find you?
I work at a law firm. It's cozen.com. And I'm
How do you
on
spell
the
that?
COZEN.com, and my bio is on there.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
You guys, thanks for tuning in. If you're looking for me, come find me over on Instagram, Facebook, or on the blog. And if you haven't purchased one of my books, you absolutely want to. Not only was it a Wall Street Journal bestseller, but it's kind of a fantastic book called No Crumbs Left. Have a great day.